Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to target nearly every mood and health concern that you can think of. I'm talking about Mood.com's incredible line of functional gummies. And you can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code BROS. Forget the one-size-fits-all supplements that you can only get high on. We're done with that, all right? Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood that you're looking for, whether that's the Mind Magic gummies for deep work and creativity, or the PMS support to ease cramps and balance mood swings, or their sexual euphoria gummies to help you feel ready for action and turn every touch into a full body experience. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much anywhere these days, but Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get to that perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with the code BROS. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use the promo code BROS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Yes, welcome to Drinking Bros.
We still don't have a timer on the screen to let me know when it's okay to swear.
When it's okay to swear, because we've heard that it is 90 seconds on YouTube, or else they won't recommend your video. So we try to go 90 here. In the meantime, I'll give a proper intro without swearing.
Good luck.
And then really get into it. We've got the Real Life Narcos on the show here. We've got Steve Murphy and Javier Pena. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, Ross and Dan. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Likewise, thank you.
Absolutely. Man, you look great. Have you been doing the Zoom all along? Like, you guys are dialed in, you got everything moneyed up. Usually it's somebody blurry who looks like they're in an Al Jazeera video.
We're trying to be something besides cops in retirement, you know.
Thank you for the compliment, and please tell everybody who's listening how good we look.
Yeah, I mean, you guys should start at OnlyFans probably. Do you know what that is?
No,
it's called OnlyFans Narcos, and it's just we've heard that Javier's got some kind of
crazy sex life.
Yeah, some like there's some things have gone down.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Some people have gone down.
Of course.
Just so you guys know, there's a lot of Hollywood in the Narco series, but that part right there about his sex life, that's all true. Yeah.
Which we'll get to, but there's a thing called OnlyFans, which every celebrity is trying to capitalize on OnlyFans. So you go on there, it's private unless you pay for it, and then you can do
nudity, sex, porn, anything you want. So Javier, look, if times get desperate,
yeah,
you can always open up an OnlyFans and see the real life narcos having sex like they used to back in the '70s. You know,
yeah, full bush.
I'm ready, and you know what? I'll do it for free. Don't worry about me.
You're gonna want to make that money. I mean, it is crazy the amount of money these guys are making. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of which, I'm sure the COVID is nuked you guys for speaking gigs around the country and around the world. I mean, you guys are so famous at this point for your story. One would think it's just like, ah, shit, you don't get to go out and meet and greet the people anymore.
You know, this is 2021 is our fifth year sucked being COVID. Mm-hmm. But the first 4 years, we averaged about 75 appearances worldwide per year. So, you know, to get your wings clipped and thankfully I'm home with my wife all the time. It turns out we still like each other. So that made it a little bit more bearable, you know?
Yeah, that could have gone the other way, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. There's been several times when she said, don't you have somewhere to go?
Yeah. I think that's the dream for wives, is for us just to be gone forever.
Yeah, one would think
forever, right? Like it's gone most of the time, and then at some point just gone.
We got lucky because podcasts were deemed essential, so we've been working the entire time, so I haven't had the same issues as everybody else. But a lot of people are, what you just said, they're spending more and more time with their significant other, and they're finding out they really don't like each other. You guys been good through all this?
Yeah, my wife and I are getting along great.
It's still good. But you know what? The backyard, like everybody else, right? The patio, we put more work in it. That's where a couple of neighbors come over on a Friday. So spent a lot of money on patio stuff, right?
Yeah, I was at my parents' house in North Carolina over the holiday break. And there was a gentleman about your age just pacing in front of his garage, sitting in a lawn chair, drinking out of a Yeti like the one I'm holding right now. And I was like, oh, what's going on? And he goes, COVID. Daughter lost her job, and the two kids and the wife and husband are moving. And I'm like, oh, no. Yeah, so he's out by the garage all day. But
so when you say guys our age, you mean 29?
Exactly. Yeah. Look, we're all young men, you know.
Of course.
I'd make you guys about nine.
Exactly. Well, I'm super close. I'm injecting toddler blood into my skin, so I'm trying to get younger as the years go by. Doing an okay job about it now. So let's get into your book here, because you guys have a book called Manhunters that is out now.
I know a guy that wrote a book called Manhunters, but it was an entirely different kind of manhunting.
Yes. Right? It was about a gay couple.
Yeah.
That was in South Beach, Miami.
Yeah.
Totally kidding.
No, they were, they had bad skin from being outside in Miami all the time. So they were harvesting skin, right? But it doesn't work. You can't just put somebody else's skin on your skin.
You can't.
It doesn't fucking work. I don't know why people think you can do that.
No.
Every time I'm like on Instagram, there's all these Instagram models like, oh, you should just peel other people's skin off and put it on you. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that. Yours is actually about taking down Pablo Escobar.
Oh.
So it's a little different, Dan.
Well, I mean, you guys really fucked up cocaine prices for a couple of years, which I was not happy about.
Yeah. Look, nope. He's giving you the thumbs up there.
Nope. Two thumbs up. I'll hear about that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that there is endless fascination about Pablo Escobar, obviously. You guys have been really cashed in off of it. I mean, it's been amazing. Did you know when you were a part of it how big, like, the rest of your life was going to be?
You know what? Nothing at all. And we never realized. I remember Pablo Escobar was killed, what, in 1993?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then the Netflix started, what, 5 years ago, basically now, more or less. And, you know, it's like, you know, nobody ever thought of this would actually be a story or, you know, that people would be interested in it. So, you know, nothing at all for me. No one ever realized none of this was going to be like it is now.
Yeah, because it seems it's one of those stories to me that there's just endless fascination. And look, I've seen you guys in a million things. Documentaries, everything, you name it, that it's just, it's one of those stories that I can't consume enough of. And I felt this way about the OJ Simpson case as well. There's just some things that just stick with you for whatever reason. And people romanticize about Pablo Escobar.
Well, he was a much bigger deal than I think you're giving him credit for. Something like 80% of all cocaine that came into the United States came from him. He was murdering federal judges all over the place. Like, mm-hmm. narco-terrorism came from this guy. He changed the game. FARC would not exist if it weren't for this motherfucker, man. He's one of the biggest players of the entire 20th century in any type of commercial industry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They were making, I don't know how much, you guys would probably know more about this than me, but they were making like billions a month at that time.
And yeah, how much was he raking in at his height, Pablo Escobar?
Well, you know, it's kind of hard to say because this is a guy who cornered 80% of the market. So, you think about it, and just in the podcast world, wouldn't you like to have 80% of the market out there in the podcast world? I mean, that'd be a monopoly, right?
Boy. Yeah, I would definitely love that. Although, people would be, there's a bad part of that too. People would be cut. We see so much fucked up shit here. If 80% of all people are listening, we'd be done in 2 weeks. They'd be outside protesting right now.
Yeah.
We'd have a whole new problem.
Yeah.
No, it's hard to tell. You know, Forbes magazine rated him as the 7th richest person in the world, I think, 6 years running. Mm. And his estimated wealth was between $8 and $30 billion. Now, we've heard a story when that article came out one time that his son, Juan Pablo, called Forbes magazine and said, "You guys got it completely wrong. It's a hell of a lot more than $30 billion." So, you know, nobody really knows what the true numbers are.
Man, that's crazy. How many people do you think he's murdered over the years?
You know what? We put an estimate at what, 10,000 to 15,000 innocent people. That's on our, and it's a estimate that was done by us. We saw the killings, but however, there's one of his sicarios, a guy by the name of Popeye, and he was one of Escobar's main sicarios.
Yeah,
he got out of prison about 5 years ago, and he's recently died. But he himself has said that Pablo Escobar killed about 50,000 people. So, and you hit it right when you said this guy was, we call him the inventor of narco-terrorism. Mm-hmm. You know, Pablo Escobar was the one who came up with the narco-terrorism. And you know what? You know, we saw the killing of a lot of innocent people for being at the wrong place at the wrong time with the car bombs. You know, we saw the famous commercial airline, Avianca Airline, that was, you know, going from Bogota to Cali. About 103 people were killed. There was 2 U.S. citizens on board that airplane. Countless judges, politicians. The next president of Colombia was going to get elected. Pablo Escobar had him killed. So it was just something that you really can't explain. We've tried, you know, the movies, the documentaries have tried to do it, but however, it was just the violence. It was a daily occurrence. Mm. And what I mean daily occurrence, 10 to 15 car bombs on a daily basis. The murder rate in Medellin at this time was, what, 300, 400 people on a weekend. Mm-hmm. And all killed at the orders of Pablo Escobar. So it's life didn't mean anything. And he wanted numbers. And this is why I said just innocent people being at the wrong place at the wrong time were killed by Escobar because of the car bombs here.
Man, were you shocked when he died what they did with the body, the citizens there?
Yeah, that was a little gross, you know. But the culture there is different than what we're used to here in the United States. You guys have been around the world. You know, different countries have different, I don't want to say traditions, but they look at things differently than the way we do. You know, we're the ugly Americans. I was a little shocked that they broke into the mortuary and pulled the casket out, paraded it in the streets, and opened it up. And also, like most countries, they don't embalm bodies down there. I don't know if they do now, but back then they didn't. So you can imagine the aroma that was coming out of the casket as they're marching it through the streets. But people looked at him as a folk hero. And that's one of the myths that we try to dispel. People say, well, he's a Robin Hood. You know, he was taken from the rich, taken from the government, given to the poor. Well, the stories where he did build housing for poor people, he built clinics, soccer fields, gave away money, gave away food, all that is true. And those are very good things. But when he needed new sicarios, because his existing sicarios were being killed by the cops and the military and the rival drug gangs down there, where do you think he went to recruit?
Yeah.
Right back into that barrio, boy. Yeah. And I tell you what, those people loved him. They looked at him like a god. So he might go in and say, you know, he'd hug him and kiss him. He'd say, oh, my, you know, my people, I need, Pablo needs 100 people who are willing to kill for Pablo, who are willing to die for Pablo. And the sad truth is maybe 250, 300 teenagers would step up and volunteer to die for that guy.
Man. You know what, if I can add, right now, in all our talks, man, we encourage tourism, visit Colombia. It's a safe place. It's a safe country. Great people. Colombians, I don't know if you met any, are just some of the nicest people in the world. We have a lot of friends. They'll give you the shirt off their back. Hard workers. And we always tell them, though, you just got to be careful. If you do go to Medellin, and we encourage visit Medellin. It's the flower capital of the world. Great parades, the fiestas there, the temperature, the picturesque, the mountains, the great food. And I tell everybody who goes to Medellin, the only thing you do not do in Medellin, you do not badmouth Pablo Escobar. Because there's still a lot of people that consider him that Robin Hood. And you know what, guys? The most common tourist attraction, I hate to say it, but I'm going to say it, is Pablo Escobar's gravesite.
I knew it.
People lining up to go to his gravesite.
Did people go, put coke on top of it and snort coke off? Because that's what I would.
Well, that's what they do with Jim Morrison.
That's what I would do
in France, yeah.
That's definitely what I would do.
Listen, Dan,
I feel like this is all a sting. This is all a sting operation. Is it? You guys are just keeping me on the fucking YouTube right now so you can have the cops show up here. This is really sophisticated. Not because they reached out to us, right? God damn it.
After today's podcast, Dan, there might be a couple guys in coats and ties come by and talk to you.
Oh,
right?
That's fine.
Just go easy, Doug.
That's fine.
Take it easy on
I've dealt with that before.
Yeah. Dan's killed hundreds of people himself overseas, so we're fine.
Yeah, we're fine.
No, but it's crazy, that people still visit the gravestone and all this stuff. In particular with the series, obviously, with Narcos, and as big as it is on Netflix, because people don't realize Netflix just isn't here. It's in 180 countries around the world. So, this series is beloved around the world. What was the call that they were going to do this series about you guys?
Well, it's funny because a friend of mine, I live in the D.C. area, and a friend of mine here is a small-time producer. He introduced us to a couple of Hollywood producers, and I went and met them. And I'm in D.C., Javier's down in San Antonio. So we stay in touch. But both those guys, they want to take our story, and they had a personal agenda. They want to make political statements out of it. And we're pretty much apolitical. We make fun of everybody that does that kind of work. So, and all along, we thought nobody really cares about this story because it's just too old. It's just out there. So, anyway, when this guy, Eric Newman, called, he contacted us through a retired Marine that we worked with in Colombia. And I told him, I said, you know what? Thank you for the offer, but we're not interested. Of course, the Marine's like, you son of a, whatever. And just he blasted me on the phone. I'm like, okay, I'll call this guy. So I call Eric Newman. He's the creator of Narcos, executive producer. And he gave me his little spiel, and I turned him down on the phone. Javier and I had already discussed it. And I'm sure he about fell out of his chair. Because we found in dealing with Hollywood, people will sell their souls to be on television.
Yes.
So he said, listen, I'm coming to D.C. anyway. Would you just have dinner with me and a couple of writers? Let us, give you our spiel. And if you say no, it's no. And I'm thinking, and this is honest God's truth. I mean, I've been a cop my whole life, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking, all right, these are Hollywood producers. We're going to go to a really nice restaurant, and it's going to be free. So I thought, yeah, I'll go. And sure enough, we went to this fancy restaurant. I couldn't pronounce most of the stuff on the menu. But in the meantime, Javier and I did our homework on Eric Newman and the other guys. Turned out Eric's father's Randy Newman, who wrote a lot of the Hollywood songs and some of the older movies and all that stuff. And very successful. And our personalities just clicked. And at the end of the night, he said, what are you going to do now? And I said, well, I'll talk to Javier, but I'll recommend that let's follow through and see what happens with you guys. And Eric said, as we're leaving the restaurant, he said, one more question. He said, why are you guys so hesitant to tell your story? And I was just real honest with him. I said, Eric, the last thing we want anybody to ever do is glorify this piece of shit, guy, Pablo Escobar, who's nothing more than a mass murderer. And he promised us right then. He said, I promise you, we will not glamorize him. In our opinion, and Javier and I's opinion, we believe Eric has lived up to his word. So that's how it all got started.
That's really funny that he's related to Randy Newman. If you could have gotten Randy Newman to score Narcos, it would be a way different series.
He could sing Short People.
You've got a friend in me.
Because Popeye was a short guy. What is it? Button Man. Have you seen his documentary?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
It's incredible. But every time somebody gets murdered, they just pop in that Randy Newman song, You've Got a Friend in Me. That would be so good. It's funny you say that because, yes, Hollywood does have an agenda. And, once you sign your life rights away, that's it. I mean, they can do whatever they want after that. It's 50-50. So we've had everybody on the show. Marcus Luttrell is a buddy of ours from, obviously, Lone Survivor. He sold the rights to his, and it ended up being Mark Wahlberg, who's maybe about half of Marcus's height in real life, and didn't even bother to do a Texas accent in that movie.
No, Mark Wahlberg, he's like McConaughey. He never does anybody else's accent.
No, no.
Mark Wahlberg is like South Boston, irritated and confused. That's yeah. his his guy. And yeah. It doesn't matter. He could be playing a woman. That'd still be his guy.
Yeah, so. And that was the first thought when I watched your series on Netflix. I was like, oh, shit, they actually did a great job with it, knocked it out of the park. Because you really don't know. I mean, it could have ended up real bad. What's your participation like in it now? Are you guys on as tech advisors? Do you go to set? Do you call in? What's the process with you guys behind the scenes on the Netflix series?
Well, you know, they sent us up there. And like I said, we're not TV people. We didn't hear us the first time with them. So, you know, we sat with them for about 2 weeks, and they got like 12 writers, and they have read every book, seen every documentary out there. So, you know, and we're not used to this. So, man, we told them everything like a cop, right? What happened, how it all went down, our participation, details, because we were there, you know, during the search for mm-hmm. Pablo Escobar. So, man, you know, and we took a lot of original stuff we still kept, and but they weren't really interested in all that. So then, so when we come back, you know, they start sending you the scripts. And it's like, man, hey, that didn't happen. And like, yeah. But then I think you hit it on the head. You know, there's what do they call it? Artistic license.
Yeah.
It is very important. You know what? And I'm going to mention it to you all. My part, if you see the second part, my character, you think that I'm on the dirty side, that I'm a dirty DEA agent, mm-hmm. helping those Pepes, you know, you know, screwing all the women out there and, you know, snitches, communists, everything, right?
Yeah.
And being on the take. And then, you know, but before they did that, it's kind of interesting, though. I got a, you know, and Eric Newman called me up personally. He says, Javier, man, you know what? That second series, your character, we're going to put you out to a little bit, be more on the shady side. We know that didn't happen, but, you know, and by the way, he says, I'm going to send you a piece of paper. Don't even look at it. Just sign it, send it back. I said, Eric, of course. Well, what is it? Just basically that you're okay with us doing it that way. Basically, what I signed was that I would not be able to sue Netflix because of my character assassination. And you know what, guys? You know, my thought on that was, I know I was making money. I didn't give a shit. I'll sign whatever it was. What else do you want me to sign?
Yeah,
you can judge me up here in my fucking mansion, bitch.
Exactly.
How about that?
Yeah, I would have said, look, let's up it. Let's up that number by 10-20%. And you can say I was a trans at some point.
Yeah.
You know?
I wish I would have said that, man. Yeah, but well, you know, you're just like, you're making a little money, not that much, but it's like, oh, okay, yeah.
I wonder this when what are the chances? This is a recommendation for you, Javier. You should dress up like the Mandalorian for Halloween next year just to troll Pablo Pascal. That's all I would do. if somebody played me in a fucking TV show or a movie, all I would do was dress up like all their characters every year and send them pictures of it.
That's right.
For the rest of their life.
That's why I got Pedro Pascal in my bag. Yeah. You see him in the poster?
He's a great actor.
great actor.
And you know what? Nicest guy in the world. He's just a great guy to work with. So, you know, and you know what? One thing that we did that I don't think they were expecting it. Steve got it arranged through our headquarters, which we couldn't do that right now. But we went with them to our DEA training academy. They were embedded for 1 week. Like you said, how Steve, we got that authorized, but they were up there in DEA. And they went through undercover, surveillance. And it really helped them prepare the part because they told us they were going to prepare the part like a police officer. And obviously, you know, ours is a little bit, it's a different role. So by being up there 1 week, and they did everything. They did the surveillances, the shoot, don't shoot, undercover. Who got killed? Boyd, right, Steve? You know, exercise?
Yeah. Yeah. He he tried to be Joe Cool, and they shot him with a fake gun.
That's what needs to happen. Like, let's really get into it, you know?
Yeah, everybody that's got all these opinions about what it's like to be a police officer or an operator or something like that, just put them through those shoot, no-shoot scenarios with sim rounds, though, so it actually hurts when you get shot.
and that's what they hit him with.
Oh, yeah. I got hit in the neck with one of those things one time. It was not fun.
Did he check out after that? Was he like, dude, I'm all good. I think I've researched the I'm good, or I'm getting out of here.
Well, I think he had to go change his pants there because they had this guy come out of the back room, Mongo, and he comes in and stands him up, pats him down. He finds his undercover gun. You brought a gun in my house. Who the heck are you? You know, and he just blasted him verbally. Then Mongo goes in the back room and then sneaks back out and with his own undercover gun, pops him three times. Boyd slid down on the floor out of his chair.
That's hilarious.
I think he shit his pants. We're over in the corner just laughing our butts off at him. But, you know, hey, I've been there too. That's why you go through training. You learn, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And you know, real quick, the object of the exercise was it's in a house. You know, you don't know who you're dealing with. The object is don't go inside the house. Very simple, right? He went inside the house, got shot, and you know. But anyways, when they leave, he leaves a poster and it's still hanging at the bar at the DA Academy. There is a bar. And he's got his name, says, don't go inside the house.
That's awesome. When you were talking about your sex life and then them taking liberties to it, was that true at least?
Oh, come on, man. You know that's true. No, that everything was true. Come on,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I bet it was nuts, dude. You know what? Colombian women are amazing.
Nah, you know what? I tell people, you know what? It didn't happen. But you know what? I wish it would have happened. Believe me, I wanted it to happen.
that part wasn't true.
You know, you know what? I'm single, and I was dating, of course, but I didn't date snitches. I dated a lot of girls in Colombia. I mean, you know, I'm by myself, and it's a beautiful country, you know. So, yeah, I did my fair share of, you know, hanging out.
we're using a lot of euphemisms here.
This is my partner, so I got to take up for him here just a second. He did not date hookers, snitches, or communists, but every other woman in that country was fair game.
Okay, look, I'm fine with the prostitutes, though. If you did hook up with a prostitute, we've all been there. That's fine. You know,
This is not true confessions here, Ross. So you don't have to give it up, man.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying we're not going to judge you for that, brother. That's it. You know, you slept with a prostitute.
When I moved, and I'm glad you're in Austin because that was my first duty assignment in DEA. That was my first office, and I loved Austin. I got there in 1984. And I'll never forget, there was a moving special on South Congress. It was about, I don't know, $250 a month. You know, I was broke at that time. There was a rated X theater right next to me, right? I'm sure it's gone now. So when I come home, you know, the hookers would be on my street corner, and they knew I was some sort of cop. So they called me Mr. Policeman, you know, but, you know, what South Austin at that time is very different. But you know what? I loved Austin, you know, and East Austin, I tell people with some of the properties are going up back then. East Austin was known for, you know, the heroin side of town. You know, I did a lot of undercover in East Austin. But one of my best friends, like I said, he bought a little property for his mom on Rainy Street back then. I think he paid like $35,000. You know what, Rainy Street?
It's worth more than that now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's Austin's a great, it was a great town, great learning experience for me. Meth, it was the meth capital of the world back then, if you need to know that.
No, I didn't know that, actually. Why meth? Yeah. Why meth?
It was the crank, you know, they were manufacturing there. There was still acid, believe it or not. LSD was still around.
Hey, it's still around, brother.
Yeah, it's. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. 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 Wow. I've got plenty.
Because we've got. I mean, for real. I've gotten hit up more times for acid since I've been here, and I was like, shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's just a sign of people are using psychedelics for non recreational shit now, so they're becoming popular again. Correct. Like people are microdosing LSD and mushrooms all the time, so it's commercially available and shit.
But LSD was back then. But anyway, I love Austin. So I had great time there. I did 4 years and. Wow, you know, I got lucky by DEA sending me to Austin. It was a great time.
Well, Steve, Javier, we told you we had some sponsors that paid for this shit wagon to be on the air. This is where we got to read them. So I apologize, gentlemen. First and foremost is ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. New year, new you. Get a new mattress, you dirtbag. You've probably been sleeping on the same one for 10, 12 years. If you're out there, it's one of those purchases you have to make, and once you make it, you're amped that you did. Start the new year off right at ghostbed.com/drinking bros. They got any deals up, Dan? Are they still rocking the deals? They usually do.
I feel like Ghostbed's always got some kind of deal going on.
They've always got some shenanigan going on there. Look, if you're a member of the military, a first responder, a teacher, or work in the government, you get 30% off everything in the entire store, and that's forever. Like, that's a permanent discount.
Well, right now they still got the New Year's special going on, which is 30% off for everybody.
Do they really?
Yeah.
Shit. Take advantage of that now. Baby, it's cold outside, and everybody's watching the NFL playoffs, college football championship. Get yourself a nice mattress to sleep in and cozy up and watch the games. Go to ghostbed.com/drinkingbros today, where, as always, they got a 36-month pay-as-you-go, no-interest program there at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Next up, we got Hawthorne. Whenever Hawthorne's on the show, I feel amped about it.
Why? Tell me why.
It's just their products are fucking cool. It's for dudes. You take a quiz, and it's just like, all right, cool. I've had a lot of success. I don't know about you personally. I have had a lot of success with those companies that do that, where it's just like, all right, here's what we think you like, and we're going to send this to you. And it's almost like they know me, like it's a fucking algorithm or something.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Dude, with the wine company, tryfirstleaf.com/drinkerbros.
Yep, same thing, yeah.
I love all of that shit. I took a quiz, and that was it. Same with Bespoke, dude, with boxofawesome.com. It was the same thing. Like, you take a quiz, and they send you fucking dope-ass shit.
Well, it's almost paralyzing, because nobody knows what they want until, you know, they go to a store or something, and we don't want to do that anymore. We want to purchase shit from our house.
Yes.
I don't want to have to go out and deal with all that nonsense, the rush, having to wear a stupid fucking mask everywhere and all this other bullshit. And, you know, doing it from your house is convenient, but only if you get the shit that you actually like.
Right.
Right. So the quiz helps. I mean, it asks you questions like, what kind of environment you're going to be in? Is it mostly office stuff? Mm-hmm. Do you go out a lot? Shit like that. And when you do go out, where do you go? Do you go out eating or drinking and stuff like that? And they custom tailor stuff based on the scents you like to you.
Yes.
Right? What kind of hair you have? And
that's
shit like
what Hawthorne is. It's a premium tailored personal care brand. They got everything, dude, for a dude in this life. You know, lotions, fucking shampoo, everything. You name it, they've got it on there. And they ship it out to you. Again, this was from you guys, dude. I know I said this a couple episodes ago with Hawthorne, but like you guys had asked for a promo code for this, and we reached out to them. I thought they were a little too high end for us, like for a show this lowbrow.
Well, we're dirtbags, but we're well compensated dirtbags. Yeah. I guess that's a good way to say that.
Yeah.
And people like to do, there's simple pleasures in life. One is the bed. That's why we love Ghost Bed. You spend a third of your life there, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is being presentable in public.
Yes.
Because a lot of work goes into making me not look like I'm dying. Because I do everything in my power to try to murder myself on a daily basis.
Yeah.
So I have to wear nice clothes and take care of my skin and shit like that. You know what I mean?
Smell great every single day.
I always smell great, yeah.
Go to hawthorne.co. That's C-O at the end, by the way.
Yeah.
That's hawthorne.co. Promo code Drinking Bros there, and that'll get you going. This is one of those ones where I'm shocked we have it. Like, it's so nice. It feels too nice for us.
It's a good one. And then the other thing we do to take care of our body is obviously fill it full of Killcliff.
Yeah, killcliffcbd.com. When I was at home over break, I went back to North Carolina to see the folks. They had already gotten the Flamin' Joe, by the way. Joe Rogan's got his own flavor there.
I've got some showing up tomorrow, actually.
Do you really?
Yep.
They didn't send me any of those.
No, fuckers. I bought it, asshole. They didn't give it to me.
Well, I didn't know. I was like, hey, man, is this for sale on the website?
It is now, yeah. You can just buy it. Yeah.
It is, yes.
And it said limited time, but I think it's been so, like, everybody likes it so much, they're never going to be able to take that shit down now.
It's crushed. 25 milligrams of CBD in every single can. They now have five amazing flavors. So they got grape, strawberry, orange kush, mango, and then this Flamin' Joe, which is pineapple with a dash of jalapeno in it. It's only got 20 calories, no carbs, no sugars in this, and you will not piss hot. There is no THC in any of this. 25 milligrams of CBD, and you get 30% off with the promo code Drinkin' Bros at KillcliffCBD.com and free shipping. Mm. That's a big deal with cans.
Yeah.
You get free shipping with that. So go to KillcliffCBD.com today. Promo code Drinkin' Bros, 30% off. Sorry, Steve and Javier. We got to pay the bills around here.
Oh.
That's awesome. And, let me ask you this. When you guys look back at the crazy lives you've led, do you miss those times? Or was it just so stressful and everything else that you're like, man, I'm glad I just survived that era and am able to talk about it today?
You know what? It's just like you guys. We know a little bit about your backgrounds. It was a rush, mm-hmm. right? It was an adrenaline rush like you never get anywhere else. We both started out as uniform cops. That was a rush back in the 70s and early 80s. Never dreamt that I would end up in Miami back in the 1980s when it was still the wild, wild west down there. But it was exciting every day. I had a partner get shot and one of the deals gone bad. That wasn't all that exciting, but he survived. The informant was shot in the throat. He didn't survive. But then, you know, my wife came to me one day. We're small town people. I'm from Tennessee originally, but I went to high school and college in West Virginia. Mm-hmm. She's from West Virginia. So we're just small town people. And living down in South Florida, and she came to me after about 4 years. She's like, "Boy, you know, this has been really exciting. What's the next most exciting thing we could do?" And I said, "Well, maybe we could go down to Columbia." She looked at me like I had a third eye up here, like, "Are you freaking stupid?" You know, but you got to know her. You got to let her think about it. You know, don't aggravate her. And a couple weeks later, she's like, "Well, you still want to go down there?" And I said, "Sure." She said, "If we're going to do it, let's do it while we're young." So we go down there not knowing, you know, I had no idea I was going to be working on the Escobar case, but, you know, you're thinking, well, heck, I've survived Miami, 4 years down in Miami in the 1980s. Well, let's go to the next step up. And then when I got there, that's when I met Javier, and he was working with another guy, Gary Sheridan. And Gary got promoted and moved on out, and that's how Javier and I got to be full-time partners. You know, there's times when you're in Medellin, you've been out on the gunships all day long. You come in, you're having a cold beer there in the field. Getting ready to go to bed, and you're thinking, there's only two DEA agents in the entire world doing what we're doing. We're the only freaking gringos here. What the hell's wrong with us?
Yeah.
But it was exciting. It was a blast. You know, not something I'd ever want to do again, but people say, well, weren't you worried about getting killed? Well, sure we were, but you guys have been in the situation. I don't want to say you ignore it, but you kind of get used to it. You do become somewhat complacent, right? Mm. You're always aware of your surroundings. You're aware of what's going on. You're hyper-vigilant at times, but you understand that's just part of the job. And then, you know, you add the fact that Pablo put a $300,000 price tag on each of us. That didn't help things.
Did you feel insulted because it wasn't like higher? Because he's making billions of dollars and you're only worth $300,000.
Yeah, your life is only worth $300,000.
To be fair, he had hits out on everybody, so it couldn't be that much, right? Like, he was killing 15 people a fucking day.
Yeah. Were you pissed that it wasn't $1 million at least on you guys?
Well, you got to understand, we were cops, so $300,000, that's a hell of a lot of money.
That's true, especially back then. Shit.
Yeah, back then it was about $1 million. But
yeah,
you know, and that's
real quick, you know what? I came out of, I was in Laredo, Texas. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, Austin was my first office, mm-hmm. did 4 years, and I wanted to go to Mexico, and they made a mistake in my paperwork. They sent me to Colombia. That's how I ended up there.
So because white Americans can't tell the difference between Mexicans and Colombians, you ended up on the Pablo Escobar case.
You know what?
That's right. Pretty fucking funny, actually. That's really funny. And it changed your life forever. So
you know what? Yeah. It did. Changed
that's really funny.
My boss said, "Javier, you're going to have the Escobar case." And they were like, wow, something, you know, just changed everything.
That's good.
That's hilarious.
That's a good story, actually.
What made you guys want to write a book?
Well, you know, over the years, people kept telling us, you guys ought to write a book, you ought to do a movie. And, you know, that's not why we did the job. We did the job because that's what we were assigned to do. And it just turned out to be exciting and, you know, turned out to be the biggest cocaine manufacturer and distributor in the world. You know, to this day, there's still not been a criminal as wealthy as Pablo Escobar. Chapo didn't even come close, believe it or not. Chapo Guzman from Mexico.
Yeah, not even close. No.
But in the government, and so some of the interviews I say this wrong. In the government, you guys know you're not supposed to make money on the side, right? And I'm not. It's funny how the politicians do it, but we weren't politicians. We're just cops. So you weren't allowed to have outside employment. So once Netflix came along, it just happened that we were coming up on mandatory retirement age anyway in the federal government. So the timing was perfect. Turns out that Eric Newman, the creator of Narcos, was good friends, grew up with a kid named Luke Janklow, whose father created Janklow and Nesbitt, one of the largest literary agencies in the world. So he introduced us to Luke. Luke liked our story, found us a publisher. We got a ghostwriter, and that's how the book came about. After retirement, I tried writing. I sat down one day at the kitchen table for like 6 hours. Boy, and I just typed my butt off and thought I had, you know, I thought I captured this whole thing in writing. I woke up the next morning and read it, and I thought, what a bunch of horse shit. it was terrible.
That's always the process. And that's why I ask is, I didn't know if you guys saw the series and you were like, all right, I'd like to set the record straight about my real life and versus what you see on TV.
Right. You know what? That's partly accurate. We wanted, after the series came out, you know, and we said, you know what? We need to tell the actual truth of what really happened. And, you know, in the series, we love the series. However, they got, you know, the artistic licenses. Mm-hmm. The timeline, the chronology of the of Narcos is very accurate, you know, although what happened. But the, you know, some of this stuff, so we just wanted to put it in writing. And like you said, hey, we're going to tell the real history because, you know, and we always, at every show we do, we say, you know what, the real heroes in all this were the Colombian National Police. You know, they took their country back from Pablo Escobar. And we lost a lot of good friends. I'm sure you've lost friends, right? And it's always that personal vengeance. And, you know, part of the success of this search was not to arrest Pablo Escobar. It wasn't to seize money, dope. It was to kill him, right? I mean, you know, we say it's, you've seen it when you get, you know. So it was a different type of a search for, you know, the world's most, you know, the world's narco trafficker, most violent narco trafficker we had ever seen, because we saw the atrocities, we saw what he did. So that's what also kept us, you know, going throughout this time.
Yeah, it's weird that he got romanticized. So, I mean, I guess it's kind of like Che Guevara, where this guy's murdering gay people and shit all the time, and now all these lefties are huge fans of him. Like, maybe pay attention to the shit he did.
Yeah, right? Maybe not buy the T-shirt at Urban Outfitters at Che Guevara.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how we lionize these total shitbags.
Yeah, speaking of which, what's the most gruesome murder you guys have seen out of Pablo Escobar?
Well, you know what? We have a photo. We only show it for just a little bit. It was just one of my informants. They, you know, in Pablo Escobar's orders to sicarios were, do not just kill them, torture them. So they did all sorts. You see how the Mexicans do it. They cut off, they burn, you know, then they show it. I mean, that was one. But, I mean, to me, the most was the bombings he did, like the commercial airline of Yanka. Mm. You know, what are all those innocent people? And if you look at all the people inside that airplane who were killed, under the orders of Pablo Escobar, there was no informant. There was no police officer. There was no, he thought there was going to be the presidential candidate, a guy by the name of Gaviria, was going to be on that plane. You know, all those innocent people. And we've talked to some of the family members who've lost their parents who, you know, on that flight. It's like, what did they have to do in any of this? So to me, it was always that the where he killed hundreds of people with a bomb, you know, the DOS building. It's like the local FBI office in Colombia put 500 kilogram bombs. You know, it was those senseless killings. Well, what did those innocent people have to do with that?
No. Right.
The one that sticks in my mind is he set a bomb off on 15th Street in North Bogota outside of a shopping center, and the whole front of the shopping center was glass. So you can imagine what happened when the bomb went off and the shards of glass flying everywhere. And it happened to be a morning when mothers had their school-aged children there buying school supplies. So we go down to the bomb site, and as you're getting closer, you know, traffic's becoming more congested. You can see the smoke in the distance. Then you hear the sirens and you start smelling the smells. And then when you get out and you walk in, you start seeing debris, and then you start seeing body parts. And then you get up and you just see the horrific sights that this bomb has caused. You see the iconic photographs of firemen and policemen carrying the lifeless bodies of little children. For me, that's the most gruesome thing that I saw the whole time. I don't have dreams about it, but it's something you never forget.
Yeah, I would imagine. And, you know, I was looking at, ironically, the aftermath photos last night. They had published them on ABC News of the Nashville bombing. And you know, this in America is kind of, you see it once every few years, right? Somebody goes and blows up a whole street like that. But you guys were seeing this, what, 10, 15 times a day down there, right?
Yeah, and it was a daily occurrence. And to me, that was what I was afraid of, that the car bombs, because he was placing them right outside our base. Mm. You stop in to get a burger, a beer, you know, wherever you know, he thought of, he'd place them, and you did not know. That was the problem. It's like you're out on, you know, your convoy leaves, and there's one on the side of the street, the restaurants, all, and it was public places he was putting them in. His theory was he wanted body count. He wanted, so that way he could negotiate with the government of Colombia, which, you know, hate to admit it, that's what worked. That's what cost him, you know, the famous, you know, surrender that he negotiated with the government of Colombia just to his own person. You know, and that's awesome.
Well, we can talk about that a little bit. So I was actually going to bring that up. The your guys' battle against them down there was it's a good analog to the global war on terror, particularly in Iraq, where you know, you're dealing with a government and they're half in, half out of the situation. I mean, we can get into it now. Describe that this negotiation he had with the government there, where he was in jail, but he was in a private compound that he built for himself, and all this other bullshit. You guys want to get into that a little bit? Because I'm not sure everybody knows this story, to be honest.
Yeah, because I know a little bit. Because didn't he have his own soccer team that like he came was, in and he played was, there? Like, he wasn't at in the compound.
He wasn't in prison.
Yeah, yeah.
By any fucking anybody, like nobody would call that prison. For
no,
sure.
He had his own house.
Yeah.
The surrender, and then I'll let Steve get into the prison, but. Basically, the surrender, because of all the terrorists, because of the car bombs, before the politicians, police officers, thousands of police officers were getting killed at a bounty set at $100 a head. Can you believe that? Any police officer, $100 a head. So anyway, the violence is out of control. It's a daily occurrence. So now he calls up the government of Colombia and says, you know what, government of Colombia, I'm willing to stop my bombing campaign and willing to self-surrender. Wow. I mean, can you believe that? If you're the president, you're ecstatic. It was like, thank you, Mr. Wow, this is great news. And then he said, you know what? Hold on. I got certain conditions before we do all this. He says, I'm going to surrender to my own prison that I will build. I'm going to hire my own prison guards. I'm going to take my sicarios with me. They can protect me. And nobody can come and visit me at my prison. Governor of Colombia accepted that deal. And I call that basically we had lost and Pablo Escobar had won. And then right after the escape, anyway, so we show up and go ahead. Yeah, Steve does a good job with it.
Yeah, so we get there the day after Pablo escapes. We fly in there and you know, when you first got to the prison, we came in on the Hilo, so we're doing an aerial review of everything, and then we land. There's two sets of steel bars when you get to the front of the prison to create that appearance that there is a prison there. But once you got through that second set of bars, it was just wide open. Pablo's jail cell was a two-room suite. You go in the first room, and it's a combination living room and kitchen. It's got a full-size refrigerator, freezer, a full-size microwave, custom-built cabinetry, professional artwork. I mean, real artwork on the wall. He had a Salvador Dali original painting in his cell worth over $3 million.
Jesus Christ.
Then you go into the second room. It's a combination office and bedroom, a custom-made bed that's larger than any king-size bed you've ever seen, fireplace in the corner. He had an audio-visual center. Then you walk into his private bathroom. He's got a jacuzzi tub. You know, all the prisons I've been into around the world, they have group showers, right?
Yeah, nobody's got their own jacuzzi.
Oh, and this guy, he's got a walk-in closet. You pull one of the drawers out. There's a hidden safe behind the drawer. There's a section of the closet where you hang long clothes, like long coats, or if a lady was there, her dresses and things like that. And there was a hidden button up under the shelf, and you push that button and the back wall pops open. There's a coleta. There's a hiding spot back there where he thought, I guess he thought if the green goes and the cops come up here to get him, you know, he couldn't escape. He'd pop in there and we never find him. But then, you know, you look at the other cells for the other inmates, and there's only 14 inmates, Pablo and 13 others that he handpicked, including his brother. They all had two-room suites, They had private baths, but they didn't have that jacuzzi tub. So they were roughing it. You know, Pablo had it made. They didn't. Full-size soccer field, lighted soccer field. And I've got four kids. My kids played soccer growing up. We never had lighted soccer fields. You had to play in the daytime. You got outside. On the backside of the soccer field was these steep steps going up a hillside. And on the, and up the top of the hill was the back perimeter of the prison. When you got to the fence, there wasn't a gate. There's just this gaping hole inside the fence, you know, in the fence. So you could come and go as you please. Nobody's there checking you. And what he was doing was building a series of cabanas and chalets on the hillside up above the prison. We went up and looked in those, and, you know, and it's still the all the little bells and trinkets. He had the latest TVs and electronics gear that you could get. And the cool thing about every one of those houses is he had an alternate escape route. So typically what you do is you go in one of the bedrooms, you'd open the closet doors, reach down, lift the floor up, and there were steps leading you under the house, and then you could slide on up the hillside, up into the mountains and get away. We could not intercept any communications for the whole year he was there. We couldn't figure out why till we got there. And what we found was carrier pigeons.
No way.
Him and Mike
that's,
Tyson.
That's
man.
True.
Yeah, just clapping for pigeons.
Unbelievable. It was just, he had a playhouse for his children. So when they came to visit, you know, the stories of the, he had a nightclub in there for the prisoners where they would bring in hookers. They would bring in family and celebrate parties. And you know what? If this guy, if he wanted to go see a soccer game, or he wanted to go to a new restaurant, or he wanted to go spend a couple days with his family, or he ever wanted to go wherever the hell he wanted to go, he went.
Yeah.
I mean, it was ridiculous. There was no security there whatsoever.
Yeah. Cause I had saw a documentary where he was hiring soccer teams to come in and play live matches in front of him there. When you were talking about that soccer field, and I was like, who can do that? But also what a wild experience to get that phone call of like, hey guys, we got one extra game on the schedule this week. Who is it? Oh, it's a Pablo Escobar's house.
Yeah.
We were finding photos of the Colombian soccer team at this time. Remember, they were like one of the
one of the best
biggest, you know, in the world of them playing with Pablo Escobar. Got to also mention that Pablo Escobar, we found a lot of stuff, a lot of sex toys, you know, a lot of women's negligee. Pablo Escobar was big into the orgy scene. Now, I got to mention that in itself did make him a bad guy, right? I just got to throw that out there.
No kink shaming here.
We don't kink shame.
Vibrators, negligees. We found, well, and this is true. I mean, well, I mean, everything is true what I'm saying. And we even found letters of mothers offering their daughters. I mean, that's it. You know, mom would write, send a picture, hey, my daughter would like to come visit you. When can you arrange her visit? I mean, but anyway, it was just, it was a free for all at the prison. There was no, you know, there was no, nobody was watching over him.
Yeah, look, I've got two sons myself. I've written one letter, and that's to the last Kardashian who isn't married. Now, if he can just get with her later on in the future, that'd be great. Really take care of the whole fam on that one. So I do understand that sitch.
You got to have a plan. You got to have a plan, right?
You need to. I don't know how smart he's going to be or what he's going to do in this life. And this... this would just be an easier route to knock up a Kardashian and call it a day, you know, instead of this racket. But that's nuts, man. Did you guys take anything like as like a keepsake, like when you left there?
Yeah, like a foot.
Yeah.
We took, I mean, we took, I mean, a lot of little type stuff. You know what? I they gave me a book, but he had written Pablo Escobar before The Escape. He was going to give out, I think he had what? About 30 books where he had written. It was a satire on the U.S., but every book was autographed by Pablo Escobar.
Well, he did that one. He's got that picture of him during the height of his fame, him and his son standing in front of the White House. When he's the most wanted man on earth, he's just like, what's up, bitch? It's ridiculous.
And you know what? He was coming in the 80s to the U.S., but no one knew who Pablo Escobar was. There's a house in Miami that Pablo, and it was cut. We went there, Steve and I, we're talking about this house that was found, but Pablo Escobar had bought it in the mid 80s, signed the deed. under his real name. It's his real signature. It's a beautiful property. It overlooks downtown Miami, South Beach. It's on the water. But, you know, talking to some of the older neighbors that remember, they were telling us, yeah, we thought this guy was some sort of ambassador, you know, because there was always people with guns around him, bodyguards. And some of the neighbors said, we loved him during Halloween because, man, this guy would give out money to all the kids who would come to the house.
I heard that. I heard he would give out money all the time.
That's a classic thing, though.
Robin Hood element.
Bumpy Johnson did it in New York, right? Yep. For decades. Saddam was saying the first thing he did when he came to power was build hospitals and schools. That's the first thing he did, right?
Oh, that's interesting.
It's a classic dictator move. It's what you do.
Man, that's wild.
Have you guys seen the series out about Bumpy Johnson?
No, I didn't know there was one. What is it?
It's is it Epic? The executive producer is Chris Brancato, who was one of the executive producers in Narcos, who's a real good friend of ours now, and we've stayed in touch with him, and he's going to kill me because I can't remember the name of the show.
The cable network is called Epix. It's called Godfather of Harlem.
There you go.
And okay. Forrest Whitaker plays Bumpy Johnson.
Really?
Yeah.
That's great.
I wonder if he's playing him with an eye going straight forward, or is it still?
No, it's going to go off to the side. Forrest has not fixed that eye yet. He's got a roaming eye. So if you think he's looking at your wife or girlfriend, he's not. It's just Forrest Whitaker. I know. We're awful humans. But I get that all the time. Like, who, you know, what celebrity you look like the most? And it's always Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Everybody says that about me. So I think it's my height. Just my height is really.
I thought it was the hair.
Really similar. Speaking of which, when they notified you guys that you guys were doing the series, did you have your dream actors to play you? Were you like, hey, it would be awesome if Brad Pitt could play me or someone like that?
Nah. Quite honestly, I didn't watch much television or movies. I watched a lot of sports, but I didn't watch a lot of television. They would send us emails, hey, we're talking to so-and-so. We're talking to the guy that played the Lone Ranger, Army Hammer. We're talking to the guy from Battleship. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it came up with Boyd Holbrook. That's probably more realistic to play my part than those really, really top-tier actors. Boyd's a country boy from Kentucky, too.
Well, I think that's what makes the show work, is it isn't ultra-famous people, because you want to live in that world and be a part of that story. So if they would have brought in, like, super-famous people, you'd have been like, yeah.
Well, Pablo Pascal had gotten kind of famous for that role in Game of Thrones, but he was only on like four episodes, so it wasn't like that big of a part, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now
that's Pedro Pascal, my guy, and he was, like I said, and I had seen him on Game of Thrones because he was kind of a famous guy, but it was only like four or five times.
It wasn't on much,
Yeah, so when I looked him up, I said, man, shit, you know what? This guy's a good-looking guy, man, of course.
He looks like the kind of guy that would have been banging hookers and informants all over Columbia, right?
Yeah.
He may still be doing that.
Excellent job, though. He did a great job.
He does it with the Mandalorian helmet on, though, so you can't tell.
Yeah.
Right. Sorry, Disney. Disney, we apologize for whatever.
Do we? We don't know Disney.
Nah, fuck Disney. But anyways, you guys got lucky with the casting because those guys are both, like you said, they weren't super well-known, and they kind of became well-known for those roles, which is a good thing, right?
Yeah, because it helps you get more into the story versus like, all right, so-and-so is playing this. Like, I watched Ford and Ferrari over the break, and it was Christian Bale and Matt Damon, and it took me a little bit to get into it of like, all right, was that really who it was, or was that just Christian Bale doing his thing? But with this, you kind of just jumped in. You really didn't know what it was about, and then, you know, obviously it explodes and blows up.
No pun intended.
Yeah, no Pablo. Pun intended, obviously. R.I.P.
Yeah.
Although, if you die, we are going to carry your body through the streets of America, Dan.
No, I just throw me in the... I've said it before, and I'll say it now. Just throw me in the trash when I die.
Dan actually just wants to be thrown in a dumpster. But I'll wheel that dumpster around the city of Austin, obviously, so everybody can see him, and he can have a nice send-off.
I don't think anybody's going to care.
No, I think they will.
To be honest.
There's 10.3 million listeners. One of them will care. Let me ask you this.
They'll send flowers, maybe.
With the memes that are out there, those Pablo Escobar memes, do you guys get sent those all the time, or do you think they're hilarious?
Like the sad boy memes
memes from Pablo Escobar.
Yeah, that's really funny.
I see them all the time.
I haven't seen those, but we do a lot of law enforcement conferences here in the United States, and it's not unusual for a cop, especially the narcs, they're pretty sick, like you guys,
yeah,
to come in wearing a Pablo Escobar t-shirt. And so when they do that, we have to point them out to everybody and make them stand up and have a little fun with it. You know, it's all good fun.
That's awesome. One of the things that I was always most curious about as far as, like, you know, narcotics officers, can you guys do a shit ton of cocaine in case you get put in that position where it's like, hey, man, show me you're not a snitch. Do this coke.
Who told you that?
I'm just asking.
I've been telling them that for years.
Yes.
That's why I'm doing the coke, just in case I get a call from the DEA and I have to go undercover.
Yes.
It seems unlikely, but nothing is impossible, right? But
you're well qualified, huh?
You have to do it, right?
I've been studying for years.
But hell no. We don't do that.
You know what?
Really?
One story. When I was in Austin, I did a lot of undercover. Remember there was a strip bar called, can I mention the name?
Yeah, go ahead. Fire away.
I think it was Sugars or one of those. But I was doing some
Sugars. Sugars is still here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's all over Texas now.
He was in the mid-80s, but there was a pimp. Anyway, and I got real close with him. You know, I mean, he had a lot of the girls. But, you know, I was the big Mexican guy who was going to be buying a lot of coke. He had a big coke connection. Anyway, you know, what? We went out to the car, and some other trafficker comes in, and he's trying to get me to do a line, right?
Yeah.
You know, like, he's a cop, and it's only me. The pimp from Sugars and this other trafficker. And I'm just, hey, this is a business for me. We don't do it. But anyway, the guy I'm working on, the pimp, jumps for me. Man, you know, he starts hitting the other guy, leaving me alone. So, I mean, you know what? It worked out. But, yeah, we don't do dope. And I tell people, you know what? When we go into a bar, restaurant, we got like 20 surveillance agents watching us. In our deal is, we're at the bigger end of the, you know, of the pole, right? We're dealing in kilo quantities. We're not, you know, dealing over here with a.
Yeah, I love that trope you see on fucking cop shows where the cop pulls out a knife, or anybody pulls out a knife and sticks it in the bag. And then, like, what if it's goddamn anthrax, you idiot?
That's exactly why I asked, because you see that in every single Hollywood movie.
That's the dumbest thing of all time.
Cool, man. Are you a cop? Awesome. Then prove it to me. I want you to see you do this cocaine in front of me.
You scoop a little out and put it into a package with a certain chemical. We're not going to get into the process here. Shake it. If it turns blue, it's cocaine. The end. You don't fucking snort the shit. Jesus Christ.
So that's true.
I got to show you a doll for Christmas. I got a doll.
That's hilarious.
That's hilarious. You got a Funko Pop doll.
My wife found it on the internet, but it's a Javier Peña doll, and the guy just poked it away.
That's awesome.
You've made it now.
Yeah, I'm going to get one of those.
I got a doll. Yeah.
All right.
Do you still smoke anymore?
We never smoked. You know what?
That's showbiz, baby.
Right.
Yeah,
we
right.
smoke cigars, but that's right. about it.
Never smoked. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't spend that much time in Miami and South America without smoking cigars. That would stand out.
Yeah, that would definitely stand out. That's hilarious, man. What other liberties did they take about you guys that you were just like, I wonder why they did that?
Well, they show... And one part they show Javier and I shoving each other in the embassy and getting ready to go into a fist fight. The truth is, we've never even had a disagreement. we're just best friends. We're complete opposites of each other, but we've got a partnership that's fantastic.
So you like hilarious. You're like the odd couple, but you killed Pablo Escobar.
Yeah.
Well, somebody nice. Had to do it.
Yeah, but well, I mean, it was, you know, Delta and the Colombian security forces, but that's a good story too. Let's talk about the day that bitch got murdered.
Yeah, let's talk about the day that
because I enjoy Escobar those stories. Yeah,
yeah. yeah.
Okay. I mean,
I'll start it off. That day, I was sent by the ambassador. U.S. ambassador sent me on that there was an informant who called him that he only wanted to talk to me. That Escobar was somewhere. I think it was in Haiti. And I said, Mr. Ambassador, with all due respect, and you know the powers the ambassador has, right? I said, you know what? He's in Medellin. We're close. He said, if you don't get on the plane, he says, I'm going to kick you out of the country. So, you know, I lost my argument. So, but I'm glad that Steve was there. And the guy who tells me when I get to Miami, the informant's on the phone, and he looks at me and says, Javier, they just killed Pablo Escobar. That was my my news to Escobar.
No shit. What was yours?
Well, for me, I was in Medellin that day, and I was over talking to the Delta and the SEAL Team 6 guys in their room, but it, you know, they looked right out on the quad, and you can see the executive staff rushing over to the colonel's office. And in police work, we call that a clue. So I was following a clue to find out what was going on. And when I walked into the colonel's office, we had a good enough relationship with him that he, you know, he motioned me to come on in and listen to what was going on. And that's when his son, Lieutenant Martinez. So you had Colonel Hugo Martinez was their boss. Then his son, Lieutenant Martinez, is the guy that actually found Pablo Escobar that day using radio directional finding equipment. So, you know, the lieutenant colonels and the majors are whispering to me what's going on. And you can hear Colonel Martinez telling him, listen, surround the place, secure it. Don't let him get away. We're loading up the troops. Well, our troops were 600 police officers. Oof. That don't happen in just a minute or two. You know, you got to assemble everybody, issue weapons, assignments, get the trucks out, all that stuff. So in the meantime, they went ahead and hit the place. And the Delta guys, they really took on a strong training role down there. Mm. And I got to tell you, you know, regardless of what anybody else thinks, I love those guys. Whether you're SEAL Team 6 or you're Delta, everyone we've met, I have the utmost respect for. You know, when we do our shows, we tell the world if we're ever kidnapped, that's who we want to come and get us because we've seen what they can do.
Yeah.
I mean, they are that good. So,
yeah, there's somewhere around our office we have a Bin Laden pistol target with Rob O'Neill's signature on it, the guy that killed Bin Laden. Wow. So we're a big fan we're a big fan of DevGru and everybody else. But you're right. If you see Tier 1 operators getting spun up, it's probably a good idea to pay attention because some shit's they don't really get spun up for no reason.
In our book, they're the studs of the world. Mm. So anyway, you know, it went down, and the next thing you hear is a major that's leading the operation comes up on the radio, and he says, hey, Viva Colombia, Pablo Escobar's dead. Now, if you watch the Narco series, it shows that I was on the riff when he was killed. That's not true. I was back at the base. I rode out with Colonel Martinez after the fact. So I guess the cool thing about it was, well, there's a couple of things. One is the Colombian National Police deserve all the credit because they took their country back from that piece of crap, right? The gringos, as much as we participated, they deserve the lion's share of the credit, and we're glad that it happened that way. The second thing is I used to carry a camera everywhere I went. When we're on, if we're out on mountain operations, flying around in helicopters, whatever it might be, I always had a camera. So we were able to capture the photographs that day, which is what we use in our shows now, you know, when we're on the road. And because we took the pictures, they're ours. Because it's ownership, you know, we'd have to get anybody's permission.
Which is a big deal these days.
Yeah, you own the rights to those pictures?
Sorry?
You own the rights to those pictures?
Well, we own the pictures, but they've been published so much on the internet, we don't publish them.
Yeah, they're fair use now.
They're everywhere. So, you know, we don't fuss anybody when they use them. But once I got there and was, you know, saw the scene, and of course my job was to confirm that's Pablo Escobar. And I got on the roof with him, and you've seen the photographs of us standing around, and we're holding him up like we've been deer hunting that day. And it's not a picture I'm really proud of, but I'm not sorry that it happened either. You know, you got caught up in the moment with the Colombian National Police. We'd seen so many of our friends be murdered. We went to a funeral one time that had 8 Colombian police officers in it. It all were killed in one operation, you know, so you get a little cold to things like that. But then when the family showed up, this is a cool story. So his mother and his sister show up, and I'm on the roof looking down at him. And for whatever reason, I got on a red shirt that day. It's just, you know, a horrible color.
It's like Tiger Woods on Sunday. When Sunday comes around and Tiger knows he's going to win, wears red, right?
Victory Sunday.
Yeah.
So I'm on the roof watching, and finally the sister says, I want to see Pablo Escobar. If you say you killed him, well, the bodyguard, when he was shot, fell off the roof and was laying on the ground. So she kind of elbows her way over there, you know, and she looks down and sees it's not Pablo. She starts calling the cops everything but cops. I mean, she's calling them every name in the book. You're inept. You're incompetent. You should be fired. You should go to prison. That's not Pablo Escobar. You killed an innocent man. And they just let her go on. Finally, when she ran out of steam, they looked at her and said, hey, look up on the roof, bitch. Well, she did. And her reaction is what confirmed. I mean, I was, you know, 99.9% sure it's Pablo Escobar, but her reaction confirmed it for me. But then after that happened, one of the lieutenant colonels, I got with him, and they took me back to the base because we just didn't want the focus to fall on the United States. We wanted the focus to stay on the Colombian National Police because of what they did. I mean, they suffered so many losses. They dedicated. They have some of the most professional police officers we've ever worked with. And you talk about guys that can get the job done. These guys could do that. They fit in that category.
Did you guys go out that night and celebrate? I'm always curious when something like that happens. And we've had Rob O'Neill on the show a million times and other people. I always ask them, what you did that night? Did you go out and celebrate? Most of them just say, I just woke up in the morning and did, you know, same job I was always doing. But you have to imagine for somebody this big that you've spent this much time in your life and the focus of your life, you had to have done something, right?
We went back to the base, and they a police base in Columbia is like a military base here in the United States. They tripled the guards on the perimeter. I mean, you're already sleeping with your gun, but you know everybody was on pins and needles that night because we were expecting retaliation. Mm. Quietest night I ever spent in Medellin.
Yeah, there was a. I'm sure there was a power vacuum after a guy that big goes out, right? I mean, everybody's scrambling to figure out who's going to take control of that shit.
Yeah, and it you know it lasted for about a week or two, mm-hmm. and then the Cali guys just took over. But the next day is when Javier was back, and he flew in from Bogota to Medellin. He came into the base. They pick us up in the Huey gunships, brought mm-hmm. him over. A lot of high-fiving and visiting, and then he and I headed back. It was a Friday night when we got back into Bogota. My wife and another agent's wife had already planned out this party in the DEA section, and we had pizza and beers. My wife and I had already adopted our first daughter by then, but she knew it was going to be a party night, so we had our housekeeper spend the night to take care of the baby. We got home about 10 a.m. Saturday morning. It was an all-nighter.
There it is. Finally.
did you guys do coke or what?
From Miami to Bogota, the plane was full of news people that I had always seen on TV, you know, because they were covering the death of Pablo Escobar. Yeah. I just didn't say a word, wasn't supposed to talk to anybody. It was just Univision, you know, just everybody was on that flight coming to Colombia to cover the story.
Yeah, because, you know, social media didn't exist back then. So, because if it did, there would have been shots of you on the plane. And
yeah, you would have taken a selfie with Pablo. Like, look at this dead bitch.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been rad. Do you look at, the El Chapo thing that just went down, right? Kind of similar, like, you know, bad dude, obviously.
Well, the latest thing that happened is way weirder than anything that ever happened actually with Chapo, even him escaping. So the latest thing, from my understanding, is one of the sons is penned up at the compound, federal police and troops everywhere, and then the other son calls from a different location, mm-hmm. like, hey, we've got all the policemen's families right here. Let my brother go or you're fucking dead. Like, everybody's going to die. That's way more fucked up than anything Chapo ever did. Like, it's getting worse down there now because there's nobody in full control, and there's nothing worse than like a mediocre effort towards somebody that's truly evil, because all it does is kind of stir things up a little bit mm-hmm. and make them more violent than they would have been otherwise. You have to go in there and murder that motherfucker. You have to drag them out by their feet, drop a bomb on them, whatever you got to do to stop that shit, because to be honest, I know that sounds coarse, but even if their fucking families and shit get in the way, because at some point, that mother, like, Escobar is probably responsible for 30 to 50,000 deaths.
Yeah.
Right? Weigh that against the 12 people on his compound. Frankly, we should have dropped a fucking bomb on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Was that ever a thought? And going back to the El Chapo question I was about to ask, do they call you on something like that and be like, hey, man, I know you guys dealt with the Pablo Escobar thing. Do you have any advice on what to do with El Chapo?
Well, when we were still on the job, we were in various positions. I was working out of our special operations division, and I was in charge of the Mexico Central America section. And we, some of it's classified still. I can't talk about all of it, but we had really good indicators of where we could find Chapo and know exactly when he would be there. And we would fly to Mexico City and have meetings with the ambassador and other agencies and eventually with some of the Mexican authorities. And, you know, they would ask you, what did you guys do in Colombia? And I said, you just need to call Delta or DevGru, mm-hmm. you know, let them do their job.
Yep.
And you'd have thought I was a heretic. Oh, it's a sovereign country. You can't invade a sovereign country. Well, what the hell are Mexicans doing?
Yeah,
they're not doing a damn thing about it. And they still haven't.
No.
You know, they get him in custody. He's escaped twice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a strange one.
Yeah. The problem with Mexico is, you hit it. It's the corruption. Yeah. The corruption. You know, and I'm just reading right now where they want to kick DEA out of the country. I just saw where the president in Mexico. I mean, the corruption is just so big. It's endemic. It's been on forever. And, you know, and I was in Houston. I was in charge of the Southwest border, you know, from Brownsville all the way, you know, to McAllen, Laredo. Mm. And it's just the corruption, the violence, you know, the throwing the bodies, the heads on a dance floor. Pablo Escobar's fight was against extradition, whereas the Mexicans' fight is whatever they can do to get their dope across the border by intimidation, right? Mm-hmm. By bullying, intimidation, showing the bodies, hanging bodies on the bridges, and the corruption. Look at some of the, you look at the Chapo trial. How much corruption came out of that, right, over that trial? People testifying over the money they paid the politicians. So it's just a problem that's it's not gonna go away.
Yeah. Yeah, and I wonder, you know, looking back at it, is it better to leave these guys in power at the end of the day? Dan and I have talked about this numerous times on our show because he was in Iraq. Mm. And you're like, man, would it have been better if Saddam Hussein was there? Would it have been better if Pablo Escobar was in there? Because like you guys said, then there's a bunch of people fighting for power. There's still a bunch of corruption. Does that make shit worse or does it make it better when you're just dealing with one guy? What are your thoughts on that looking back at it?
Well, yeah, Pablo Escobar, what happened? We took the whole organization out. Cali Cartel took it over, right?
Yeah.
We took down Cali Cartel. You know, there's cartels, man. They're just waiting for that option, somebody so they can take over power. As long as there's money to be made, they don't care who dies or who kills. You know, we still need enforcement effort, but it's just the money is just so big, you know?
You know, here in the United States, everybody keeps preaching, hey, let's legalize it, let's legalize it. I mean, and when we're on stage, people will yell that to us from the audience. I did an interview here recently in Dallas, and I read some of the, made the mistake of reading some of the viewer comments after we did the interview. And I mean, I got hammered, but I'm not changing my standards and my morals because we've become a permissive society, just to be real frank about it. People say, well, it works in other countries. No, it hasn't. Go look at them. Do an in-depth review of the countries that have legalized drugs. It hasn't worked in a single place yet. Portugal's trying a new program now. Initial indicators are it's going to be successful. Let's give it a couple of years and see what happens when we have a society of addicts that are no longer productive.
Right.
And you and I, the hardworking people, the taxpayers have to take care of their sorry asses because they're addicted to something.
Well, I'm both.
Yeah, Dan's, but Dan's a
rare breed. I make good money and I'm on drugs all the time. Yeah, but yeah, I don't expect other people to be like, but for real, I mean, it's legalize or making drugs illegal and then legalizing them again. Both instances are treating symptoms instead of causes. You know what I mean? It's to make the drug illegal in the first place was just like, this is too hard to deal with. Let's just make it illegal, right? Mm. But it doesn't take account of what's causing people to do that shit in the first place. It's that life sucks, right?
Yeah.
So make life better. That's the way you solve that. It's not by making the drug illegal, and then legalizing the drug because it's creating crime for it to be, or creating violence for it to be illegal is also not the right solution. Neither one of those is the right thing, but people are fucking lazy, right? No. Especially politicians.
Oh, and it keeps getting worse.
If we're dealing with people—
Term limits.
Yeah, exactly. If we're dealing with particularly Mexican politicians, I mean, we think we're corrupt here. Oh, it's not even close. I mean, they're openly taking money from people.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even a big deal. So what the fuck are you going to do about that? You know what I mean?
I don't know. And then you look at it like with the Chapo case, it took Sean Penn, the actor, to bring down El Chapo after all of these years.
Yeah.
How is he still alive? How did he not get murked yet for that? Like,
how is he not in jail?
Yeah. Yes. All right. Yeah. Like when you saw that story with Sean Penn going down there with the Mexican soap star, Colombian soap star, whatever she was on, were you just like, holy shit, how is he still alive? How is he not in jail?
Good question. Good question. You know, every law enforcement officer I know in the United States has the same question.
Because, I mean, look, you look at Sean Penn. He was on TV the other day. It looked awful. Looked like he'd woken up in some form of cave himself, like he was on the run. And I thought to myself, I was like, how is he still alive? Like, those guys would have been killed over and over and over again back in the day. How did Sean Penn do it? And he got to fuck that girl, by the way. She admitted it on the Netflix series.
I hadn't heard that. Thank you for that information.
Oh, yeah. I obviously have to give that. But yeah, she was like, look, I did sleep with Sean, and you know, we had it. And I was like, oh, well, of course you did. Like that's the whole thing.
Sean Penn looks like he's got some kind of like a black hole in the middle of his face, and it's slowly pulling all of his features closer to the middle. You know what I mean? Like his eyes. Yeah. He's got too much around here, and there's too much space.
Well, that's what happens to all of us, I think.
I don't think so. I don't think so. His face, the features on his face are too small for his head. And they're getting smaller. It's like there's gravity squinting. There or something. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
There's a lot of passion going on there. But that guy has been, what, with El Chapo. He's been with, who was the Cuba? He was Castro. He's hung out with Castro. He hung out with Hugo Chavez. Does the government not interview Sean Penn and be like, yo, man, how are you getting these fucking meetings?
Well, the State Department would for sure.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know what? It keeps his name in the news, doesn't it?
Mm. It does. But it's so shocking that you're like, man, you hear about all these gruesome deaths and murders, everything you guys were talking about. And then yet Sean Penn's just still walking the streets, having a latte in a Marlboro Red somewhere at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's good amazing. Question. Yeah. Look, you guys are incredible. This was a blast of a show. This is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would each of you like to give the drinking bro of the week to? And it can be anybody, by the way, a woman as well.
Wow. I don't know.
No one's inspired you? Who helped you on the case that nobody really knows about?
You know what? There's a guy who never got credit. His name is JJ Ballesteros, ATF agent who was with us in Medellin. He was one of the first ones to come out with us and help us. And he did a lot for us. And JJ and I drank a lot of beer. I mean, he was, I would find a bar there in Medellin, in Bogota. He'd call me at 11 a.m. in the morning on Saturdays. We're gonna go drinking, you know. I'd be shit faced by 5 o'clock. I'm throwing up, and he's still going strong, man. But JJ Ballesteros, UT graduate, ATF guy, and he did a lot for us. Like I said, especially in the Avianca bombing, he did a lot of that investigation. So JJ.
Okay, perfect. What about you, Steve?
You know, there's two, actually. One was Javier's first partner before I got to Columbia, Gary Sheridan, mm-hmm. who is one of the smartest people I've ever worked with. Looks like Mr. GQ, he's slim and trim. He's got the silver hair and he dresses impeccably, you know, and the women just swoon over him, but never got any credit for all the hard work he did on the Escobar investigation simply because he got promoted and moved to Barranquilla. So he was big. And the other would be Pete Ramey, who was a former Virginia State Trooper. We were railroad cops together, and Pete's the one that introduced me to DEA. I didn't even know what DEA was. When I would get whiny and feeling sorry for myself, he'd smack me back across the head and, you know, and get me back on track, and has stood beside me to this day, one of my best friends ever. He lives down next to Roanoke, Virginia. So love him like a brother.
That's awesome.
My drinking bro of the week is cocaine, because without it, none of this would have ever happened, right?
We got to introduce you to some therapists, man. You got Dan, what's wrong with you, bro?
Dan's fighting off the demons. Yeah. We talked to Tom Satterley yesterday, who captured Saddam Hussein, actually.
Yeah.
It's 2 days in a row. We've had the person who got Saddam Hussein and then Pablo Escobar.
Yeah. We should have Rob on tomorrow, I guess.
I know, right? With that, he was talking about, you know, depression and drugs and all that stuff, and you were like, bing, bing. So the book is called Manhunters, How We Took Down Pablo Escobar, Steve Murphy, and Javier Pena. It's available on Kindle, audiobook, paperback, hardback, all that stuff. Did you guys do your own audiobook? Did you record that, or somebody else do the voice for that?
No, they have professionals do that, but we'd also like to throw out there, take a look at our website, deanarcos.com. You can get autographed and personalized copies there. Plus, you can see our calendar and fan pics and videos and all that other stuff.
Oh, do you guys have like a fireman calendar or something?
It would be great.
It's in the works. It's coming.
Like, get one Photoshop where you're holding Escobar's head up or some shit like that.
Yeah. Dope,
well, we're going to have one, but it's going to be all Javier's old girlfriends from Columbia.
Just ripping lines, dude.
You guys would be able to make bank off of that.
That would be hilarious, actually.
Yeah, those old school Colombian girls. Yeah. My God, man. Javier, I just would have loved to have been your penis, man, for about 10 years back then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to convert to Buddhism and try to hope you come back as Javier's penis.
That's all I want in this life, man. So, you know, we'll work on it. I'll pray to somebody, and then we'll see if it happens. Gentlemen, we appreciate you being on the show today. It's a great book. Manhunters is out now. And then check them out on deanarcos.com. Thank you. For D'Anthony Holloway, Steve Murphy, Javier Pena, I'm Ross Patterson. This is Drinking Bros. Good night, everyone.
Hockey fans, can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.